Genesis chapter 33. And tonight we're going to be talking about reconciliation. Reconciliation. And you remember, as we've been studying through this, that Jacob and Esau had not been in good harmony for a good long time. How long had it been since the two boys parted? Garrett.
Almost like 40 years.
20.
Yeah.
20 years. All right. It's an interesting thing to do if you take and do some research on how old Jacob was and all these things, because I think I led you astray when we looked at that. You start adding up these dates, and you can actually come to a pretty accurate calculation, because we know that when Jacob moved to Egypt, he was 130, I think. And he was 147 when he died. And he was there for 17 years. So if he was 130 when he moved to Egypt, then you start backtracking and putting the dates together. This sounds crazy, but what did I tell you how old Jacob was the other day? I mean, like 76 or something like that when he went off to get married. Well, that's a little bit late for planning a marriage to me. Well, I thought it was before too, because remember he was 40. Esau had got married when he was 40. And it was just shortly after that that then the next part of the story comes. But you start backtracking the dates, and it doesn't work at that. So he must have been about 76, because he spent 20 years up in Haran. And then he came back down, and we know Joseph was 17 when he went off to Egypt, when he was sold by his brothers. And Joseph was in Egypt for, 13 years before he became the prime minister. And then it was 2 years later that his family moved down there, and you put all those dates together. Yeah, and it's strange. When I thought that, come on, no, I couldn't have been 76 when he goes off to get married. That seems crazy. But I don't know. If you can come up with something better than that, let me know. I'd be happy to talk with you about that, because that does seem strange. But as I dug into that this week, I couldn't see any other explanation. But as we look at this here tonight, so we're looking at a time when Jacob and Esau had been apart from each other for at least 20 years. And now they're headed back together. Jacob is headed south. We've already seen how he was fearful of Laban, and Laban, God calmed down Laban in that dream. And then Jacob came closer, and God wrestled with Jacob. And now Jacob's ready to meet his brother. And this is the fearful time of reconciliation. And reconciliation can be a very fearful type of a time. Trying to get right with somebody else that you haven't been in harmony with. And sadly, it's not just the biblical account of reconciliation, but this is something that's a reality in everybody's lives from time to time. And sometimes it happens regularly, and that's tragic. But where two friends, are at odds with each other, or maybe two loved ones are not in agreement with each other, and things are not going well, and they need to get reconciled back together again and resolve their problems and be back in harmony. And that's what God is calling for here tonight. And in beginning of verse number 1 in chapter 33, we read, "And Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau came, and with him 400 men. And he divided the children unto Leah and unto Rachel and unto the two handmaids. And he put the handmaids and their children foremost, and Leah and her children after, and Rachel and Joseph hindermost." He was kind of a conniver even then. You think about that. He had favorites in his family. And so he puts his handmaids out first with their kids. So if there's any battle and anybody's going to have to die, it'll have to be them. And then the next one was Leah, and then he puts Rachel and Joseph, his favorites, in the back, just so they got the most opportunity to run if there's problems. He was kind of a conniver. But you look at the story and you wonder, why did Esau bring 400 men? You think about it, 400. That's a lot of people. And he brought 400 of, apparently, his servants with him, 400 of them with him to meet his brother. Why would he do that? I don't know. I'm not sure. But he did, and he doesn't seem to be mad. Maybe he thought that God had blessed Jacob up in the north, and now Jacob's coming down with a massive army to going to come get him. That's a possibility. Maybe he was defending himself, and when he saw that Jacob was coming in peace, then all worked out well. But we see the very first thing of the this reconciliation is actually the act of reconciliation I want us to look at here first. And it, Jacob and Esau meet each other, and we see in verse number 3, and it came, and he passed over. Jacob passed over before them. Now when it says passed over, it sounds like he crossed over something. Remember, they were at the Jabbok River, in the middle of Israel here on the eastern side. They're over here, and he crossed over the border. Now apparently, Esau probably came up from the south to meet him, and he's over here, and he crosses over the river ready to meet his brother. And he bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. You can just picture this in your mind. Jacob is walking to see his brother. He takes a few steps, and he bows down and kneels as you know, the custom was, and bows to his brother, and takes a few more steps, and he bows to his brother, and a few more steps. He does it 7 times. And he does this as a symbol of humility and submission to his brother. Even though God had placed him above his brother, even though, his brother was only moments older than he was afraid of his brother. And Esau at this time, I think, probably didn't know what to expect either. And so Jacob, he's bowing himself to his brother. And then we see in verse number 4, and Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. What a great verse. Here's the reconciliation verse. Verse number 4. They were reconciled. And so as soon as they get close to each other, Esau ran to meet him. Ran to meet him. And so this must have been, you know, in Jacob's heart, he's probably pounding and looking at his brother, and I don't see any weapons, and he's running toward him. And he runs and he grabs on him and he hugs his brother. He embraces him. He gives him a big hug, and he fell on his neck, you know, just hugging over his neck. And he kissed him, and they cried together. It was a great time of reconciliation, getting things back where they ought to be. And that is a wonderful time. But yet, as you look at this, you know, that took courage on Jacob's part. You know, there was courage to pass over and head off to meet his brother. And his humility in bowing to his brother those 7 times. And when he finally comes down there, you know, he never would have had to do any of that stuff if he hadn't tricked his brother 20 years before. I mean, if he had just been honest, everything would have been fine. They wouldn't have been enemies, and he wouldn't have had to do any of that. But he had done wrong, and now it was eaten at him. And so all those 20 years, Jacob had that on his heart and on the burden that was weighing him down. I'm not right with my brother. I'm not right with my dad. I've done wrong, and it didn't please God. And that was eating at him for all those years. And now he sees him, and God motivated Esau to run to meet Jacob. What's that remind you of? It reminds me of the prodigal son. The prodigal son had been away from his dad, and he starts coming home, and dad runs to meet him, throws his arm around him, hugs him and kisses him, and is glad to see him. And so we see the same here with Esau and Jacob. They embrace, they hug, they fell on their necks and kissed, and they wept. You know, they just cried together. They hadn't been together for 20 years. And now they cried to meet each other again. What a blessed time. What a joy to see that happen. They were reconciled. Now, Jacob then immediately begins to introduce those who are with him. And we see in verse number 5, and he lifted up his eyes and saw the women and the children, and he said, "Who are those with thee?" And he said, "The children that which God hath graciously given thy servant." And then the maidens came near, they and their children, and they bowed themselves. And Leah also with her children came near and bowed themselves. And after came Joseph and near and Rachel and bowed themselves. You know, here, I know that was cultural and custom of things, but I'm sure that Jacob must have told them as well, you know, of the fear that he had. He must have told them that the last time I saw my brother, he said he was going to kill me. And I'm fearful of him. And we need to show him great respect. And so when you meet him, you be sure to give him some honor and give him some respect. And so Jacob had probably told him all this. And now here he comes with his 12 children. He's got 12 kids now. And he's got 11 boys and a girl. And Benjamin hadn't been born yet. But they all come and they bow down before Esau. And he makes his introductions to them and tells them about that. And mixed in all this here, you can be sure that after they've hugged and kissed and wept and cried, Esau said, "Tell me what's been happening. Tell me about your situation." And, you know, you can just imagine that evening as they sat down around the fire and Jacob just shares his whole story of all that God had done for him and told him all about the trip up there and how he had probably told him about the ladder that he saw on his way up when he was in Bethel. And he gets up there and how that God provided him a wife, just like their dad got a wife in a similar way up there many years earlier. And that God provided for him. And then he marries these wives and all the trickeries involved. Who knows how much detail he told him, because, you know, maybe he didn't want to talk about all that. But he was there for the 20 years. And then Esau probably told him about that. Now, Esau was down in Edom, which was down here in the south of the Dead Sea. And so that's where he had settled down. And remember, Dad was over here in Hebron, Beersheba area, down in this area, where the Isaac had lived and Abraham had lived. All right, and I know you can't all see the map because it's blocked there, but it helps you to just kind of picture it in your mind as to what was taking place there. Now, Jacob insisted then that Esau take his gifts that he gave him. Verse number 8, and he said, "What mean thou by the drove which I met?" And he said, "These are to find grace in the sight of my Lord." All right, now, so Esau's asking him questions. Who are all these people? What's this big droves that I met? Remember, he had sent out all these different groups. The first little group with a certain amount of animals, and the second group with another bunch of animals, and third group, and fourth group, fifth group, and he meets all these, and they told him that they were gifts. And now Esau says, "Well, what was this? What's the purpose of this?" And he says, "These are to find grace in your sight. I just want us to have peace. I need you to give me peace. I want to have peace with you. And so I want you to have these. These are my present to you." And Esau said, "I have enough, my brother. Keep that thou hast unto thyself." And Jacob said, "Nay, I pray thee, but if now thou hast found, if I have found grace in thy sight, then receive my present in my hand. For therefore I have seen thy face as though I had seen the face of God, and thou wast pleased with me." Jacob is just overjoyed. He saw his brother. He's not mad. They hugged each other. They kissed. They're at harmony again. And Jacob said, "I want you to have these presents because we're one again. We're not enemies anymore. And I'm so excited and blessed with that. So I want you to take these things. Please, these are my present." And it says there that in verse 11, "Take, I pray thee, my blessing, the blessing that I is brought to thee because God hath dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough." And he urged him, and he took it. So Esau takes the gift that he gave him. You know, seeking reconciliation with someone when we've been at odds for a long time is not easy. It wasn't easy for Jacob. That was one of the hardest things he probably ever did, is to go back knowing that he was going to have to face all that he left behind. And when he left problems. He left Dad deceived. He left his brother angry and hateful and ready to kill him. And he left his mom that he never saw alive again. By this time, she was dead. And he comes back, and as far as we know, she was dead. And so he probably never saw her again. But all these things are in his mind. And it's not easy. It takes courage to do that. It requires humility to do that. It demands dependence on God to go and see someone, to speak to someone that you have not been right with for a long time, and maybe someone that you've been, you know, upset with, or they've been upset with you for a long time and you haven't spoken for a long time. It takes courage and grace and God's help to do that. But if there's something between you and another person, God wants you to reconcile. That's the right thing to do, and you need to trust God and ask God to help you to do what Jacob did and get it right with them. And God will bless you if you do that. We really, really need to do that. You know, even in our families and in our marriages and things of that nature, we need to make sure that the reconciliation takes place right away. It shouldn't be 20 years, maybe 20 seconds, and we just get it right. We've done wrong. We need to get right with each other right away so that it doesn't grow and it cause grief and problems and bitterness between us. So then, secondly, I want us to notice the benefit of the reconciliation. So we saw the act of the reconciliation, what all took place. What was the benefits of all this? Well, there was great internal peace. Jacob, after 20 years, you can just imagine what it must have done to him, all those 20 years, just eating at him like, oh, my brother's mad at me, and dad's upset with me, and I did all those things. Oh, I wish I could make it right. I wish I hadn't done that. And they're all, you know, I wish I could go see them. And all this is turning around in his mind. Now, Jacob's joy that Esau was pleased to see him was a great relief to him. He had peace in his heart, internal peace, after all those years. And the fear that he had, you know, we see the fear even in the fact of how he lines up his family and how he sets them all out. And the fear that of just what's Esau going to do. And remember when he got word that Esau was coming with 400 men, he panicked and was like, oh, what am I going to do? And he was fearful and dreadful of what was going to happen. All of that is gone now. God has given him peace in his heart. You know, many marriages today lack that peace that they need because the husband and wife need to reconcile with each other. And that's something that's really, really important. Selfishness, lack of love, and unkind words will result in bitterness. And bitterness then will build walls between them. And neither of them is humbly willing to begin that journey of reconciliation. And that's where we really need to be. We need to be the humble one that is willing to say, I'll make the first step. I'll do what's right. Jacob made the right step in starting the process. He spoke to God. He had a desire to go back home. God says, you go back home. I'm going to take care of you. All will be well. And Jacob did what was right, even though it was hard. And we need to do the same. We need to be peacemakers and step out and be the ones that initiate that so that we can have that internal peace. But not only did he have internal peace, but he had external harmony. Esau suggested that they travel together. Now, the animosity's gone. Esau says, hey, how about if we just keep on traveling together? Look at verse 12. And he said, let us take our journey and let us go, and I will go before thee. So Esau's talking here. And he said unto him, Jacob said unto him, my Lord knoweth that the children are tender, and the flocks and the herds are young, and are with me, and if a man should overdrive them one day, all the flocks will die. All right, so he, and then, well, go, I better read on. Verse 14, let my Lord, I pray thee, pass over before his servant, and I will lead on softly according as the cattle that go before me and the children are able to endure until I come unto my Lord, unto Seir. And Esau said, let me now leave with thee some of the folk that are with me. And he said, what needeth it? Let me find grace in thy sight, my Lord. So Esau returned and was on that day on his way to Seir. Now, some people look at this and say, you know, Jacob's up to his scheming again because he told Esau, I'll catch up with you. I'll come down to Seir in Seir. And, you know, he didn't do that. He went the other direction. But, you know, rather than be hard on Jacob, we don't know all the details. There's a lot of information here God does not give us. And we're going to see in a moment, there's a lot of years that pass by that God doesn't tell us anything of. It just passes over him in a click and, you know, 10 or 15 years are gone. And so there's a lot of information. I wouldn't be surprised at all that Jacob did go down to see him. And he probably settled his family, got his flocks, and found a place for them to be. And then once they were settled in, he probably took, you know, maybe a couple of his family and went down there to visit him and came back. But he didn't take the whole, you know, his whole animals and his whole family down there. At least it doesn't appear that he did, because that's not where he stayed. But there's harmony between the two of them. The brothers are in oneness, and Esau's happy to see him, and he says, let me guide you down. We'll go down together. And Jacob said, no, let me just go on traveling on my own at a slow pace. And it does make you wonder, you know, when they were traveling down, running from Laban, they got down here in record time. Now, how did they get down there that quickly with all those sheep and cattle and little children and things like that? I'm not sure. It seems like he came down. Remember, Laban had chased him for 7 days, and he had only got a 3-day head start on him, so they're only 10 days. That's a long way to travel in 10 days with all of that. But again, maybe there's some details there that God has left out for us. But, you know, peace and harmony are two of the blessed benefits of reconciliation. And so if there's someone that we need to get right with, We need that because we need peace and we need harmony in our hearts, in our souls. We need that peace and harmony. We need to get right with them. What's so these are the benefits of the reconciliation, the inner peace and the harmony. But then the result of the reconciliation. This was great when you see the results of it. Verse number 17. And Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built him an house and made booths for his cattle. Therefore, the name of the place is called Succoth. All right, so nobody knows for sure where this is, but it was probably right here near the Jabbok River. So he just moved a little bit ways and moved over a little bit, found some good pasture land for his cattle and his sheep, and he built himself a little shelter, a little house, and he built shelters for his cattle. These were just booths or kind of just shaded areas for the animals to get under there to get out of the sun and keeps them from exhaustion during the heat of the day. And so Jacob does this. He settles down there and he builds this time and spends some time there. Now notice here in verse 17 he says that. And then verse 18 it says, and Jacob came to Shalem, the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Padan Aram and pitched his tent before the city. All right, now these two verses, 17 and 18, there has to be at least 10 years in those two verses. Because if you look at all the details of the situation and how old were his children when he left Haran? All right, let's just think about it for a moment. He got there and he worked 7 years for Rachel. And he thought he was marrying her. He ends up marrying Leah. So he'd been there 7 years. He's married Leah. And immediately he gets Rachel as well, as long as he'll work another 7 years for Rachel. So then after the... So he was married for then 7 years to both these women. And then he worked 6 more years for the cattle. So that's 13 years. So the oldest that the children could be, the oldest ones, could have maybe been 13 when he left. So from 13 down to about 6. Because Joseph was born just as he said, I want to leave. And Laban said, no, don't leave. Work for my cattle. And you know, so he spent 6 years after Joseph was born. And so the children were between 6 and 13 years old when they left. And they came down here. And then when he moves over here to the to Canaan land, he crosses over here in verse number 18. He came to Shalem, which is the city of Shechem, which is over here near Sychar, near this area right over in here. So he's crossed over. When he does this, the next chapter, you look at chapter 34, and his oldest sons are men by this time. They're young men, and his daughter, who was about Joseph's age, maybe just a little tiny bit older than Joseph, was now an older teenager, and she's chasing around the guys, you know, in the next story. We'll see that. All right. So there had to have been at least 10 years, maybe a little bit more, but at least 10 years in those two verses. So as you're reading, sometimes it doesn't fit and you think, where did all this fit in? But you put that in there in your mind and it'll help you to understand it a little bit better. Now, he's now finally moved back to Canaan land. He's over here in Canaan now. He's near Sychar here in this area right over here. And he's bought some land in verse number 18 and it came to pass, or in verse 19, and he bought a parcel of the field that, where he spread his tent and at the hand of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 200 pieces of money. And then in verse 20, he erected an altar and called it El Eloi Israel. Now, that's an important situation. He's finally back in Israel again, or back in the Canaan land. Wasn't Israel then, but he's back in Canaan land. And one of the first things he does, once he buys this land, he gets his property, he builds an altar. And it was in that same general area where Abraham, his grandfather, had built an altar years and years earlier. And now Jacob builds an altar there and worships God. We find in Genesis chapter 28, and verses 20 and 21, where Jacob now is fulfilling his vows. Genesis 28:20 says, and Jacob vowed a vow saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God." All right, so he's made this vow to God, and now he's come back, and he builds an altar to worship God. And Jacob, you know, had much to thank God for. You think about all the things that God had done for him since that time there in Bethel. God had taken him to Haran safely. All the way to the north into Haran, God had taken him safely to Haran. And remember, he said that he crossed over the Euphrates River that first time with nothing but his staff. So he must have been walking, and all he had was his stick. And now he comes back across the second time with all of those family and all of his cattle. You know, God had blessed him abundantly. He probably had hundreds, maybe thousands of sheep and cattle and all those animals. And he had 12 children, and he had 4 wives, more than he could use. And he had lots. And God had blessed him and met his needs. And so he had much to be thankful for. And God had protected him from angry Laban. And God had protected him from the hatred of Esau. God had turned Esau's heart around. And God enabled them to have peace and to reconcile. So all of these things were things that Jacob had that he could praise God for. And Jacob was rejoicing. And so he builds this altar to worship and praise God. One commentator put it this way. He said, God had granted Jacob request by Jacob's request by bringing him safely back to the promised land. He had vowed, Jacob worshipped the God of his fathers as his God, and he called the place El Elohe Israel, meaning the mighty God is the God of Israel. And so this is the first time that he actually calls himself that we can see. He calls himself his new name, Israel. And he says, Jehovah is my God. The God, the mighty God, is the God of Israel. And so he's drawing close to God. And as far as we can tell, everything it seems to indicate that God accepted his offering there on that altar and was pleased with him. He's back in harmony with God. He was in harmony with his brother now. He was in harmony with God. And so by reconciling with his brother, he was able then to reconcile with God. He was at peace with God, and he was at peace with his brother. And that is really the ultimate. We need peace with God as well as peace with one another. And so reconciliation is very, very key to all this. And Jesus reminds us of this importance in Matthew chapter 5, verse 23 and 24, where he said, "Therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar, and there rememberest thou that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar, and go thy way. First be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift." So what's God telling us? He said we can't really worship God until we're right with our brothers. We've got to be right with each other. And so God's saying, I want you to get right with one another, and then you can get right with me. And you can worship me. And that's what Jacob did. Jacob did it in that order. He got right with his brother, and all was well there, and then he builds his altar, and he gets right with God. And Jacob now is in harmony with God, and he's in happiness and joy. This is probably one of the pinnacles of Jacob's life right here. His family still, at this point, was at peace. He was right with his brother. He was right with God. And he had peace in his heart. And God had blessed him. And he's back in the promised land. This was really a highlight in Jacob's life. But you know, every time there's a highlight, so many times when we go through a blessing, we go through a good time, we need to be prepared because the devil doesn't like that. And the devil's going to bring problems. And we're going to see that in the very next chapter as problems come. Big problems come, and Jacob gets very scared again, and problems, we'll dig into that again next week, Lord willing. But just tonight, I want us to focus our thoughts on this. We need to make sure that we always stay reconciled with one another. And as you think over in your mind, I hope that you can say there's no one that I need to get reconciled with. But if there's anybody in your life that you're not in harmony with and it's your fault, you need to reconcile with them. You need to go and seek to get right with them and make sure that you make right your wrongs so that you can reconcile again. And that's God's plan for us. And that's the right thing to do in order for us to have peace with our brother and sister and our loved ones, and then to be able to have peace with God. And, you know, it's not easy. It wasn't easy for Jacob. It was hard. It was a very difficult thing for him. It was a fearful thing for him. And yet God helped him. And I believe that Jacob probably prayed a lot on that trip down. He probably prayed a lot. God, you've got to protect me. I need you. You said you'd be with me. Please, God, protect me. My brother was mad at me the last time. I don't want him to kill me. I don't want him to kill my family. Lord, please help me. And he prayed much. He trusted God. He humbled himself, and God met his needs. And if we'll do the same, God will do the same for us. God will help us if we'll follow that pattern.